Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Well, whatever he's doing now, it's working. Tiger with his best performance vis-a-vis par through nine holes at the Arnold Palmer since 2007, 3 under. It's a course he adores, where he has won multiple times before. And this is getting fun. I don't want to see that his back hurts or something starts to hurt, because whatever he's got locked in now is becoming a spectacle and something that we will keep you apprised of throughout the day.
Billy Hurley III just birdied on 7, so Tiger's 1 off the lead.
God.
Still though, I know, right?
Billy Hurley.
Tiger's through 9, I think you said it. The stamina, the staying power of Tiger through a weekend is really, that's my biggest concern. I don't know if it's just a situation of not wanting to have to watch the train wreck or praying that the wheels don't fall off, but watching last weekend and watching him come down the stretch, and you know, he came out hot, birdied, par, gave one back. I was worried that everything was going to fall apart at one point. And the way things were coming off the tee, that's where Tiger has struggled. And even when Tiger was at his peak, you know, when he was battling Rocco for, you know, his last championship, that was an issue. And he was able to make second shots that caught him back up with where he needed to be.
Scrambling.
On the course.
Always scrambling and always having to come up. The biggest shot of every hole was either the second or the third to
Absolutely.
Give himself any chance at birdie. Yep. So Bernstein and McKnight comes to you live today from Deuces on Clark. And tomorrow we are out as well, a little further away for the both of us, certainly, maybe closer for you, at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village, where we'll be doing this kind of thing, surrounded by all of these giant HD televisions with a lot of sports going on as the basketballs are up in the air. But you had something regarding a guy I brought up in the previous segment, an Aaron Judge.
Yeah, there was a story out today that the Major League Baseball is not exactly happy with Aaron Judge. The Yankees played the Orioles the other day, and Aaron Judge was apparently talking with Manny Machado and giving quotes to reporters about Manny Machado and how he'd look good in pinstripes and how that's definitely something they'd like to see, and he enjoyed it. We talked in the, you know, clubhouse backfield and stuff like that. MLB hates this.
He's got to know better. That's illegal.
It is. I mean, it's tampering. And I just wonder, you know, in an environment in which we've got the NCAA doing things behind everybody's backs that we all knew was going on anyway, that those kind of conversations happen,
right,
all over the place.
Right.
Let's go back to MLB, right? But we're in this environment where we know backhanded deals are done, where kids get money, kids get cars, all this stuff. We know what happens. We've watched these TV shows. We've seen the actualities of what goes on after investigations and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
For Judge to say it out front like he did, yeah, sure, that's the sin, I guess, right? If you're Major League Baseball, that's what you're upset
with. It's like tanking in the NBA and Mark Cuban getting dinged for $600,000
for being honest.
And where the Bulls have just been doing a much better job saying, we need to see what we have in our young
players. Even the Bulls got asked.
It's time for us to play the young bad players.
Even the Bulls got asked at one point to maybe put Robin back in and probably throw Justin Holliday a couple of minutes as well. Even if it's just, you know, the first eight of a quarter and then get him the hell out of there. Fine, what have you. I guess my larger point is this. We want, you and I, media types, reporters, we want our athletes to be honest with us, right?
We say we do.
We say we do. And then whether it's the institution or whether it's whatever they say we don't agree with, they suffer massive blowback, right? Well, that's not how I think about things, or that's not what I would have said, and how can you throw your teammates under the bus if Manny Machado is the guy you want? What does that say about your third baseman today? I guess, you know, to a certain point, I'd rather see it all played out in front of me. I'd rather see everybody's cards on the table. And I get that, you know, tampering, especially at a front office level, becomes much more intricate and much more dangerous
even
to the business of the sport.
At a fan level, I mean, when you are, and yes, it does go on, and I think a fan can't be dumb enough to think that it's not going on, but would you do away with tampering?
No.
Okay.
Not from a front office level.
Okay. What would rise to the... So it's like, what, like an actual contract proposal or an actual contact?
Yeah. You can't have promises of future contracts, right? Our language, you can't, you know, while you're here, talk about what your exit strategy is a year and a half later with somebody else.
Sure.
That puts the game in a very different and dangerous place. Well, maybe not dangerous, but definitely different. And probably shifts the balance of power in a way you can't. But I don't know. That to me seems so different than Manny Machado or Aaron Judge saying Manny Machado's really good and I want him on my team.
And
what the quotes boil down
to. Not only that, he's really good. We know he's going to be a free agent.
Exactly.
And I would like him on the team.
How does Aaron Judge saying stuff like I really like Manny Machado and he's a great third baseman or shortstop or whatever, how does that hurt the Orioles actually re-signing him? Because I don't think it does.
Probably no more than some of the silliness we see with Chris Bryant and Bryce Harper with their wives on Instagram. You know, because once you start going down a slippery slope there, when you say, does this connote something? Does what is this count? Is it here they are together? Hey, maybe someday we'll be on the same team.
Major League Baseball has had no fraternization rules while you're on the field for what, decades, right? But when you get to first base, what are you doing? You're having a conversation with the Sean Casey would have been banned for years had anyone actually taken the time to enforce that rule. Moreover, I kind of think fans like to see that rule violated. I like to see the personality come out of the players.
Well, look what that's done for the NBA. Look what the soap opera has done for the personalities in the NBA. When you start hearing about, and as we know, it's happened after the fact with what we know about how close the Bulls were in the summer of LeBron. We know about what, and there was so much anger about Wade and Bosch and LeBron, but the fact is, the Bulls had a really good pitch. They had a really good pitch for Carmelo, and we heard about all this after the fact. And now when you start hearing about Paul George and where LeBron is going, if LeBron is definitely going somewhere else, it has created a buzz that has done nothing but benefit the NBA.
And really, it's different. You mentioned the Bulls thing and the LeBron chase. We found out about that after the fact, right? Not so much after the fact. There was a time window in there where there was a little bit of, you know, lack of knowledge and guessing, I suppose. But as the reports came out and you found out more, it felt like you were closer to the time window. Now we see it play out right in front of us.
Right.
Like it's with Twitter and with Instagram and even with the level of instant reporting that happens, whether it be on, you know, major websites or, I guess, Twitter itself. You get to read the threads, right? You get to go all the way through process by process, step by step.
Especially because
exactly how the beef works.
Yes, and because players have taken their own agency now. That because they're expressing themselves on Twitter and all of a sudden, who tagged whom? Who is in that photo? The guys on the banana boat together. That they've taken the narrative. It isn't just what's being reported. They're putting it out there. They're offering it.
And I get that basketball is because of roster construction, because of team size, because of literally how you watch the game, that you're able to see this man in his face and he's got
these. And no helmets.
Exactly. Yeah. I still think, though, that while there is a difference between hoops and maybe baseball and how they market their stars or don't, NFL and how they market their stars or don't, there's still an opportunity, given, you know, all the things we've just talked about, for those players to take it themselves and redefine the scope of how they're valued. I think we're seeing a little bit of that in the NFL in a somewhat different way with Kirk Cousins getting the contract he got, something we'll talk to Hub about in a little bit, but I think you're seeing this shift all throughout sports.
This segment is sponsored by Cece's. New crust, new sauce, New York-style pizza. Now at Cece's, grab an extra large slice of their new meatball pepperoni pizza and new cheesecake brownies for dessert. There's so much to love in the buffet for just five and change. Only at CeCe's, prices vary. Restrictions apply. You talk about the speed of the news cycle and what happens with Twitter and text. I was laughing about it. It took 24 hours for our text line to go from, I hate everything and you guys suck and everybody's awful and burning Mitch Rosen in an effigy and dragging it down the street like Ceausescu. It went from that. Well, nobody actually texted that.
Why were you texting the score?
I don't know. Somebody in Romania was actually that. Was it Romania? Ceausescu, where they dragged him down the street?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad day for him, right?
Really rough day.
How was your day? Bad. What happened? Well, they murdered.
All the way through the streets.
They murdered me and they dragged me around the streets.
Up and down and up and down. Yeah, sweetheart, I need a drink.
It could have been better. Pour me a tall one. Yeah, but it's gone from that to actually now people talking about, I love the NBA policy. Where is Deuces? Have the burger. It's fun. I would say Twitter is going the same as well. And I should urge you to, if you haven't checked out the new website at 670thescore.com, a lot of people put some really hard work into the new version of our website. And I have to say, as somebody who posts material there every day and tweets out a lot of links there, people listen to the complaints about the old website. And I'm with you, because I experienced some of the same problems with the old website, with pop-ups and crashes and overloads and interruptions. I get you. This new website is better. It's cleaner. It is more readable. And we've reorganized Score content and being able to click to listen. And we tried to make everything a much more user-friendly portal for you to get all of your 670 The Score content needs.
I was just a big fan of going back there, taking a look, you know, first time the other day. You click on something that you want to go to, and it actually goes to that.
Yes.
It doesn't go to something else or pop-up ads or whatever. The corporate constraints of websites are sometimes very backward.
Yeah,
very readable.
I tried to explain when at some point when I was I would go sometimes when I would write a column and I would need to re-listen to an interview to grab quotes and I would try to go to back to a podcast or something. It would say, you know, it'd click on my own name and where a podcast was supposed to be, and it needed like five different clicks and five different pages to load. That all that stuff is gone now.
Yeah, you don't have to click listen seven times to actually, you know, listen.
Yes, that is exactly the point. As you discuss players and agency and what they are doing for themselves and the way the power is tilting, it brings me to Jake Arrieta. It brings me to something that I read yesterday about what Jake Arrieta went through and parceling out blame for something not happening that was expected to happen. And I've got some questions about it because I think that there's at least one unfair assumption being made that I think deserves discussion. And we are going to do that as we also are following Tiger Woods, who's one off the pace at the Arnold Palmer, and getting you ready for a full day. One of the more exciting days in sports with all of these basketball outcomes that are coming your way at the NCAA tournament. Come out, crack a cold Dos Equis, get yourself one of these amazing bacon, egg, and cheese biscuits that are absolutely...
There's still some left. You guys left some for everybody else.
The truth. They are damn good. So you can come join us at Deuces 3505, just south of the ballpark on Clark. We are going to be here as part of an all-day broadcast on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's old friend Jake Arrieta, once of the Cubs, now of the Philadelphia Phillies, and he and his agent Scott Boras had set off on their free agent voyage, hoping to arrive at $200 million, and they got 3 years and 75 guaranteed, and because of some very complicated incentives, they could end up with upwards of $135 million, depending on his performance, which I think is probably a good bet to continue in some sort of stasis or decline. And by the way, this is the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Hi, welcome to it. Hello.
Hello.
That's Connor McKnight. Yeah.
Reduces on Clark all day.
Yep.
And, did you say that?
I did. So we are at Deuces.
Good.
On Clark. And
just checking the boxes.
If it's any incentive, it's very Gambino-y here today.
It is.
Dennis Gambino is here with the better person in his family. And Cupcake, the tiniest dancer, is
yes,
here
he is.
As well.
Still very tiny. Still very cupcakey.
Yeah, he is. And what he's going on with his hair is, I don't know.
Oh, he's committed to a thing, what he's done. He has committed to it. Adam. It is. There's no retreating from where he's been.
What do you call that?
You don't. You don't.
Okay, you don't. Yeah. Just don't.
If you don't look at it, it's just kind of, maybe he stops talking about it and you kind of move on.
Okay. All right. But here's, we talked about it before regarding Scott Boras clients. And Boras has become a bit of a villain just because largely people like to blame agents and blame lawyers for things. When most people, given the same opportunity, would hire him to advocate on one's behalf.
Doesn't he function better as a villain?
Yeah,
doesn't he do his job and get his clients better contracts as a villain more times than not?
He's a professional adversary.
Yes.
And that he has embraced that. It's what he does. Yet, and David Haw, a valued contributor to this station, and when I disagree with him, I'll say so. He wrote a column essentially blaming Boras and his stubbornness for Arrieta ending up with a contract he ended up with, basing it on rumored deals that the Cubs had offered. And I don't know about you, but I always believe, and I don't care how strong an agent is, how powerful an agent's personality or reputation may be, the agent works for the player. Especially in the case of somebody who we know is as aware and intelligent as Jake Arrieta is. I'm not dumb. I know there are players, and there are younger, inexperienced players in all sports. You just say, I'll let my agent figure it out. Because they don't want to get into the weeds of contractual
negotiations. They don't want to hear about themselves.
You don't want to go to an arbitration hearing tell you why you suck, and your agent can have your boss tell you why you suck.
I've always been shocked that Ryan Theriault went through that arbitration process and just listened to all that.
Don't go to those. Somebody else did that. Was it Ray Durham? Somebody else did that where they went to the hearing like, oh, my team thinks I suck and they don't want to pay me. Yeah, there's insulation through your agent where they'll deal with that and they'll handle it. But I'm very careful about saying, well, the agent screwed up here. At any point, if Jake Arrieta had gone to Boras and say, hey, what was that Cubs offer again? I'll take it. I'll do that. He could have.
Of course he could have. And I think, too, with this market placing the blame on Boras, and maybe even Jake to a certain degree and placing it on the greed, you're facing I would struggle to say historic change in the way teams value players and assign free agent contracts. But it may well end up being that way when it's all said and done. You know, Jake has got his 3 years and $75 million deal,
right,
and
sure.
Maybe it's this blip on the radar. Maybe it's the start of revaluing free agents or devaluing free agents. But if you're Scott Boras, you have to imagine that because of the number of quality free agents he had coming into really any given market, but specifically this one, you don't think he saw this on the wall. You don't think he saw that a lot of his top guys weren't getting deals that he otherwise would have seen. I struggle to come to the conclusion that by holding back, he cost money in this particular offseason. Prior offers, like you said, if he wants the Cubs deal, he takes it. But he is the market to a certain point. Boras decides where to set these prices and how far back to come on them. Teams have largely gotten one over on Boras,
mm-hmm.
but he got Jake one of the better deals this offseason if you just look at average annual value and what could be made later on.
I think so, but I think some of that is just to tantalize Jake with his own confidence because he's to reach some of those incentives. When you talk about where he would have to finish in Cy Young voting, he would have to reverse some ominous statistical trends.
Absolutely. He talked a lot in that press conference that we heard coming out of the break. He talked a lot about how He believes he's still able to succeed despite diminished velocity. He talked a lot about what it is to find that, you know, the cutter slider that he throws and how best to make that work for him despite mm-hmm. not throwing at 96, 97.
We are going to get back to some previewing of the tournament at 10:40 when we are joined by Sam Vecenie of The Athletic to talk about these teams, to talk about the brackets, to talk about the way things are shaping up. I was also a friend today who has contacts in East Lansing was telling me some stuff about what is going on with Tom Izzo that raised an eyebrow. That after an update.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Michigan State could win the national championship this year, and they've been playing brilliant basketball ever since the program and the football program were dragged in to the scandal over sexual assaults. It was immediately in the wake of what happened with Larry Nassar there and his connection to that university, and then Outside the Lines and Paula Levine reported on a long history of unfortunate goings-on and potentially cover-ups within both football and basketball. Mark D'Antonio got his contract extension after rumors surfaced that Tom Izzo would be out. He tamped those down very, very quickly, and everyone agrees how poorly Izzo handled the aftermath of that and is continuing to say, I'll only talk about basketball, only talk about basketball. And I don't think that should stop people from continuing to pepper him with questions. But
it absolutely
everything else,
should.
No, because, oh, okay, you can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Now, that's it's not really how it's supposed to work. But according to some people I know who are close to the program, there is, when they announced the internal inquest, I believe it was former Governor John Engler that took over as interim president, and there have been some forced resignations on the board, and their internal investigation has not been in the headlines. But according to people that I know, the phrase that was used, it's being conducted internally with intensity. And Tom Izzo is, this has been a really hard year on him, and I'm not reporting anything. I'm just letting you know what some people close to the program are saying, just that I wouldn't be surprised, especially if they win. If they win the national championship, I wouldn't be surprised if he walked away with all that's going on.
I mean, a lot of people are saying that Michigan State's roster is one of the most talented he's had.
Right.
And if that is, so you're saying just right off into the sunset, well, it's not going to be a pretty sunset. He just wants to get away from the, that's not going to stop him from being pulled up on charges or having his reputation
dragged through. No. It's just, if you're talking about the internal investigation, it's not a criminal investigation.
Right, it would be NCAA charges for whatever those are.
Not necessarily. I think it would just be university issues, but you'd say, well, wait, he's the most powerful man on campus. There is now more pressure for transparency in all of it with everything that's been dragged out. And, you know, the faculty has gotten involved and asking for the ouster of some of these, you know, entire board of directors or board of trustees that has largely been an army of protection for him that's changing a little bit. And just people who know him say that it's wearing on him, that everybody who interacts with him just isn't, he's not the same guy.
I wonder if he regrets the first couple of days after the conversation, or after the news came out, after reports came out, after the sentencing of Larry Nassar came out. I kind of hope he does, because I know he went out there with a conversation, with a talking point that was, you know, it's not fair to these 10, 15 kids in my locker room, you know, to talk about something other than this game. You know, they're out there too. There are other kids that he's got to be a lot more concerned about than the 10. Those guys are going to be fine. They're playing hoops. Mm-hmm. They're doing what they want to do. They're there at a university that's going to give them every opportunity to succeed in their next step of life, whether that's the NBA or elsewhere. That's what Michigan State's done for a lot of people. And for him to go out there and say, well, I'm worried about the kids in my locker room, and be as short-sighted so as to not think about the, what was it, hundreds? In the 200s, 300s?
Yep.
Number of kids that were horribly affected by Larry Nassar. To not think about what meaning that has to go out there and say it when you are the face of a state at that point. I have to imagine that he's looking back at those deeds, at those words, and really question. I hope he's questioning himself.
I hope they got the right guy. They got the right guy.
Hope they got the right guy.
Yeah, it was something.
Pull
to
up
that
to
effect.
The wrong house with yeah. blinking lights.
Damn, I don't. We got the wrong guy.
That's not how that works.
In just a couple of moments, we're going to have a conversation with Sam Vecenie of The Athletic. More preview of what's all going to be popping off in just about a half hour. The 2018 NCAA tournament. Great place to watch it is right here at Deuces. And man, the food here is spectacular. And that's because they have an experienced and acclaimed chef in Chris Lorenz, who is running the kitchen. He got here early, and he right now is pumping out some of the best bacon, egg, and cheese biscuits you have ever tried in your life. But I'm told here that this is special food, way better than you might expect for a place that has a sports bar appeal. But this is some high-end cuisine. So come out and join us. This is the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We want to talk to Vecenie, so we are going to. Sam Vecenie of The Athletic joins us on the Bernstein and McKnight Show as we are just about 20 minutes away from the start of the NCAA tournament. He covers college basketball. These are his times. Sam, how are you?
How's it going, guys?
It's going well. We are looking at these brackets now, and we ask first blush here, where does your attention lie in these first two rounds? Are there any bellwether games? Are there any outcomes that you see that are, for lack of a better term, tone setters?
I don't know that we're necessarily going to have a ton of tone setters in the first round, you know, because the teams that are purported to be national championship contenders, they tend to have easier games in the first round. But what I do think we could see is some really fun matchups, right? Like, I'm really excited for this Rhode Island-Oklahoma game, not just because it's the first game of the day, but also because Trae Young is in it, and he's going to be going up against two really physical perimeter defenders in Jared Terrell and Sanford Robinson. How does he adjust to that? You know, we have some fun games throughout the rest of the day. We've got Colin Sexton on later tonight trying to, like, tear the hearts out of Virginia Tech in every way possible. It's going to be a blast throughout the entire day. I think that's what I'm most excited about, just seeing that tone be set, the tone of fun, the tone of enthusiasm and excitement.
Sam, something that Dan and I have been kicking around in the first hour is whether, because a lot of these top-seeded teams are much more defensively focused than they are offensive runners, whether that means that because possessions are at a premium, that lower seeds who happen to shoot the ball fairly well, like a Loyola, although that's a little higher seed than I'm looking, might have a chance at pulling off some strange upsets here. Is that kind of a theme for you, especially in that South region?
Yeah, you know, I've always been someone that's been a little bit worried about pace of play in regard to a team like Virginia, for instance, just because if you're only playing 59 possessions a night, that's going to lead to more variant outcomes, right? Just from a statistical standpoint, you have fewer event creating moments to be able to, you know, get away from teams. A big lead for Virginia is 8 points instead of 15 points. And that creates problems for them, I think, whenever they're going up against elite teams. You have to have that discipline night in, night out. Most of the time, a team like Virginia has that. And I don't think that Virginia is going to be losing early or anything, but you know, the teams that I look at that play a particularly low pace, you mentioned one of them in Miami with Loyola Chicago. I think that's a really great matchup for Loyola. They shoot 40% from three. They have a top 25 defense. I think they can really cause some issues for what Miami wants to do. I look at a team like Cincinnati plays really slow. I think it later on in that region, Cincinnati could have some issues later. And Michigan also plays really, really slow, but Michigan tends to be a little bit more offensively focused and offensively disciplined, and that really helps them in certain matchups.
Talking with Sam Vecenie of The Athletic on The Score, where it is time for your chance to win $1,000 cash. This hour's keyword is boat. Text boat to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword's boat to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
Wondering, too, Sam, about DeAndre Ayton. We've been talking, Dan and I, just a little bit about him. I'm seemingly, I think, a bigger fan than Dan is. Dan has some, can you give it to me every possession, I guess? I don't want to mischaracterize it. But I wonder if you think in that, again, looking at that South region, whether he's the guy to disrupt those heavy defense, you know, Virginia, Cincinnati teams, and whether that's the, I guess, best pro prospect in this tournament as well.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's the best player in college basketball. He will likely be getting my National Player of the Year vote whenever I have to submit a Naismith vote. So you just look at how he's able to physically take over a game. You look at the way he dominated those last two games in the Pac-12 tournament. Dropped something like 32 and 15 in both of those. Well, it's not even that he doesn't take over. It's that his teammates sometimes get a little bit rambunctious, maybe is the way to put it, and decide to start chucking shots from deep. Alonzo Trier is one of the most efficient players in the country. You're pretty okay with him taking shots. But Raleigh Alkins, Parker Jackson Cartwright, some of the other wings they have, when they're taking shots, you're more just like, okay, guys, let's just dump the ball into DeAndre, let him eat and let him do his thing. I think that they figured that out over the course of the last, you know, few games of their regular season, over the course of the last few games of the Pac-12 tournament. The big thing for them, too, has been the defense all year. They've been really poor defensively up until about mid-February, but then something clicked. They've been under a point per possession in every game where they've had their full complement of players. So remove that Oregon game where Alonzo Trier didn't play, Sean Miller didn't coach. They've been under a point per possession in all of their last seven games defensively. So I think that says a lot about where they're at as a team going forward into the tournament.
Oklahoma's Trae Young is a classic example of somebody who almost single-handedly can carry a team beyond where it otherwise would go because he's capable of just ridiculous shooting nights. Yep. Anybody else, if you had to sort of look at the field right here, maybe somebody we haven't heard of, does any one of the higher or lower-seeded teams have one of those guys and just say he can have a game and knock anybody off?
Yeah, I mean, the guy that I continue to point to there is someone people have heard of, but you really just need to watch him to get it. You know what I mean? It's Colin Sexton at Alabama. He's the most like hyper-competitive human being I think I've ever seen play basketball, and this even stretches back to his days on the AAU circuit, in the high school circuit, even at these like high school events like Nike Hoop Summit and McDonald's All-America, where some guys take it seriously in practices, some don't. This guy is just trying to like rip the heart out of the opposition every single time he takes the floor. And that's a quality that I really look for in a player that I think can take a team on a deep run into the NCAA tournament. You know, a couple other guys stand out. Marcus Foster at Creighton is a guy who can get really hot. He's going to be up against Kansas State in the first round, Virginia in the second round, potentially, if they get there. Really, really knockdown shooter, efficient player, can get hot and really carry a team to a win. And then I look at Keenan Evans at Texas Tech. Texas Tech has one of the top five defenses in the country, and Keenan Evans is probably going to be an All-American at the end of the season, just given what he's been able to do carrying that offense along. He is just a remarkable playmaker, and he's the kind of guy I think that can lead a team on a deep run.
The other kind of guy I love is, I guess for you could call it the Luke Herangode team, where guys who are effective college players who you know are...
Can't jump?
Right, and you will get into an NBA camp and just be completely overwhelmed. I look at Luke May on North Carolina, and I look at...
Athletic players.
No, which means bad athlete. Right. What is it? Is it Ostakowski is the guy on Texas who for some reason, I'm just compelled to watch him because he's, you know, try hard guy. And, you know, you hope that maybe he ends up playing on a B team in Spain for a couple years and gets a couple of checks. Anybody else like that? Anybody else? Some of these like these super college types?
Oh, the guy you're going to want to watch is J.P. McCura at Xavier. He is by far the most annoying player in college basketball, and I love it in every way. Like, he tries as hard as he can to get under the skin of the opposition every single time he takes the floor. He used to wear these, like, long sleeves. He looked ridiculous. He doesn't really do that anymore. But he's also, like, Xavier's second-best player after Trayvon Blewett. He averaged, like, 15 points a game this year. Really, really good basketball player. He'll have a career over in Europe if he wants it. But he's like the prototypical college basketball player that everyone looks at and is like, oh, that guy is a very NCAA basketball player, just in every single way.
And what's funny is the other really annoying guy is an NBA prospect. You know, maybe not going to be an NBA star, but Grayson Allen is garnering a ton of attention for being kind of a penis, even though he's probably going to make a lot of money in the league.
Yeah, Grayson, I don't even know how to react to him. Because, like, he got to college and was, like, a five-star McDonald's All-American. He's actually athletic, not even sneaky athletic. And wins a national title for Duke, was arguably the best player in that national title game his freshman season. And then, like, is an All-American as a sophomore, and then starts tripping folks as a junior and, you know, sticks his ass out into the North Carolina player last week. Like, what are we doing here, Grayson? I'm excited to see his final college games, I will say, just because he's been a character throughout the narrative of college basketball for 4 years now, and I can't really remember a narrative surrounding a player that has both been as infuriating and kind of as intoxicating as the Grayson Allen narrative.
Talking with Sam Vecenie of The Athletic as the tournament is about to get underway. It's Bernstein and McKnight here on The Score. I'm trying to build a consensus around Purdue. I'm doing my best NFL general manager build consensus sort of situation. And we've talked a lot about guards. Granted, DeAndre Ayton's in this tournament, but Matt Painter has his guys, a two seed. They are very, very big. Their guards seem competent enough, but that Big Ten was altogether bad this season. And I wonder if you think the two-seed Purdue has a chance to move through Florida or even Butler, for that matter.
Yeah, I've been a really big fan of this Purdue team throughout the year, but the committee did a really interesting thing in that they matched Purdue up with some lower seeds that I think can give them problems. You look at Arkansas potentially in the second round, not even Butler. I think Arkansas can give them a lot of problems athletically. I think Florida can give them a lot of problems athletically, because that's really the one place where I'm a little bit worried about Purdue. How do their guards beyond Carson Edwards, how do their wings match up athletically with, you know, quicker players, with guys who can combine size with athleticism in a way that really only Michigan State kind of does in the Big Ten? You know, a team like Arkansas is going to have Jalen Barford, they're going to have Daryl Macon, and they're going to have a potential lottery pick in Daniel Gafford inside, who are going to be able to put pressure on everything that Purdue wants to do. Now, what Purdue does is they shoot threes better than just about everyone in the country, and they have a force inside in Isaac Haas who can get shots against anyone in the country because he's just so big that he can establish position whenever he wants. The problem with Purdue is that teams started to figure out that equation later. If you start to, you know, just disallow the three-point shot and stick out on shooters in the corners and on the wing and let Haas eat, he can't really be efficient enough to dominate you as an offense. So I'll be interested to see how Purdue adjusts to defenses that try to take away the three-point shot from them instead of trying to take away Haas.
Sam, it's all kinds of good stuff, and we thank you for joining us.
Anytime, guys.
That's Sam Vecenie of The Athletic on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. The segment brought to you by Kidde. How old are your smoke alarms? Replaced today with Kidde's worry-free alarms. Get 10 years of power and no low battery chirps. Kidde, technology that saves lives. I can't promise Anthony Heron will do the same, but the former NFLer will at least join us to talk about the Bears and the NFL. That is coming up next, as you can continue listening and join us live. I suggest you come out here and hang out and be a part of what's going on. Our Dos Equis live broadcast from Deuces in Wrigleyville on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.